Well, welcome everybody. If you can hear me, we are going to talk about mental strategies for race day. So if you, if you win all your races, you don't need to come. But if you want to get stronger mentally, you want to like think about that aspect of your race, come on down to the Espo stage. And I am here with Feisty Media. We are teaming up with the VinFast Ironman World Championship to present these educational sessions this whole week. Get everybody ready for race day. And you can hear it later if you have to leave on our Feisty Triathlon podcast feed. And so I'm going to hand it off to our host today, Feisty CEO Sarah Gross, and she's going to introduce your amazing experts up here.
Amazing. Welcome. It's nice to see all of your faces out here. Can the whole expo hear me? They should be able to. If you're in the expo and you're feeling at all nervous about race day, come on over to the south side of the expo by the Hoka tent. We are here to help you. So as Kelly said, I'm Sarah Gross. I'm the CEO of Feisty Media. I also host the Women's Performance Podcast. So every week we talk about things that affect women specifically around physiology and mental health for our best performance. So I'm excited to be here today at the VinFast Ironman World Championship. So let me introduce my amazing panelists. First, we have Lauren Valle. She is a clinical counselor and coach. Welcome, Lauren.
Hello.
And then we have Anne Roby. She's an executive coach, and she also works with the Ironman executive team. We have Michelle Simmons, and she is a longtime coach and athlete. She was part of our So It's Your First Time panel that happened a couple weeks ago, and she was full of wisdom, so we asked her back for today. And then we have the guy at the end. Some of you may recognize Craig Alexander. He was a 3-time winner here, and I'm sure he has a few things to share. Yay. Okay, let's start. Lauren, you're racing on Sunday, right?
Yes.
Or Saturday. I can hand it to you. Okay. So you're going to be enacting some of the advice that you're going to give.
I would hope so, that I practice what I preach.
Yeah.
And I may not be perfect because there's no such thing as perfect, certainly not on this course during the World Championship. But I will try and practice what I preach.
Amazing. And so I know that you're a clinical counselor and a coach. What types of mindsets do you find create success on race day?
Yeah. What's so interesting is that there are so many different personalities that are going to be out there. And if you came to the pro panel and you know any of the pro women that are racing, you can see that there's a whole range of attitude, personality. But the thing that I think a lot of successful athletes have in common is they are flexible, particularly on this type of a course where, I'm sure Crowe knows this, that things can go sideways and you have to be able to adapt without panicking. So athletes who are self-regulated, meaning they can handle this upwelling of emotion, which I had this upwelling of nerves when I realized Crowe was going to be on stage with us, so I'm kind of freaking out right now, but trying to take a deep breath and just stay focused on what has to happen next. Athletes who can stay in the moment and just really focus on making the next best decision for the rest of the day. And I would say athletes that can be resilient in the face of something going wrong. And the best example of that was when Daniela Reif got stung at the beginning of, I think it was 2018, I think if I have the year right, where she got stung by jellyfish before the swim went off. She came off, I don't know, 10 minutes down and ended up breaking the course record and winning by, I think it was like 10 minutes, something like that. And so the announcers, when I was watching it, they were like, oh, you know, she can't overcome this deficit. She's never going to like be able to make it back. And then she did and like set the record. So your day is never over. People who are flexible, resilient, and can stay in the moment are those who will do the best.
Yeah, exactly. I used to tell myself that like there's always an opportunity to make yourself proud on race day. Like even if everything's going wrong, you can still stay in it and do your best.
There's going to be, I would guess, 50 moments that anybody out here can, you know, be really proud of, because it's hard. I'm just not going to lie to you. If you've never done this course, it is hard. So be ready for it. And you're here because you're one of the best athletes in the women's field. And that's saying something. So you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you work with executives, you work here with the Ironman team. What are some of the parallels you see between the executives you work with and sports performance?
Yeah, thank you so much. And I couldn't agree more, because in business, as in life, when things go wrong,
And listen, things will go wrong. Like, there will be something that goes sideways that you have not planned for. And it's really, in my mind, it's all about what happens next. Like, do you let that define your day? Or do you pick yourself up and keep going and figure out how to move past it? That's a major, I think, parallel. And it's very true in business as it is in sports. And I think the other thing that I share a lot of times with the executives that I work with is, what is efforting? What is working right now that doesn't need to be working? So for instance, for me right now, I can feel my jaw is super tight. And that's not helping me talk to y'all right now, right? I can feel my hips are a little bit like crunched together. I think I'm trying to look all cute up here on stage or something. It's not necessary, right? And so when you think about that, what is working? What are you employing? Often I'll find my shoulders up around my ears. So what are you actually, what is your body doing that you're not even aware of? So bringing more awareness to the things that are efforting that aren't actually helping you in the moment. And I think that's true both in the boardroom and on the race. Field.
Yeah, I was checking my posture as you were talking. I'm like, am I relaxed? Is my head aligned?
Exactly. Crown your head, lifting towards the sky.
Yeah, all the exactly. Things. No, I think that's particularly, your advice is particularly good on the bike and the run too. Like, we tend to think about, and Michelle, you would know about this too as a coach, like we tend to think about sometimes technique as a way to keep ourselves centered and focused. Would you say that's true?
100%. And our bodies move better when we are not holding excess tension.
Right.
Like, excess tension just makes you tighten up and you're not moving as effectively as you could be.
Yeah. And Michelle, okay, I wanted to ask you about this. I've heard this word kind of flung around a little bit this week about imposter syndrome. We have over 1,500 athletes racing here for the first time. Some people are, you know, we've suddenly have three times the number of slots for the women, and people are feeling like, do I belong here? You know, how do we combat that? Because I think everyone who qualified absolutely does belong here, you know, and so how do we combat that in our own minds?
One thing that's really important to understand when you're feeling inside like overwhelmed in some way, I'm not sure if I belong here, this is all scary, do I deserve this? Everyone at every level, and I bet Chloe would even, I would be really curious to hear your perspective on this too. No matter what level you're at, there's a question in your mind. Am I up to this challenge? And that's in pick an area of your life, right? So like in business, at Ironman, as a mom, as a dad, am I good enough? Everyone asks that question all the time. And so I think when we understand that I'm not alone in feeling like this, it is part of the human condition to wonder if we stack up, if we're good enough. And guess what, ladies? This is your chance. You get to show yourself on Saturday that I can do this. And it's so cool. So we don't know what's going to happen with Ironman in the next couple of years. Like, if this happens again, if we have another women's race, we might not. And if we don't, 10 years from now, we're going to look back on this year as the year that was so cool when women got to have the spotlight for the whole day. And you get to show yourself that I do have what it takes. And this week, as I've walked around just talking to random strangers, some of you, if I've come up to meet you and just introduce myself, thank you for humoring me. But really, the question is, you know, what has your challenge been to get here? And every single one of you has a story about the challenge that you overcame to get here. And what it means about you when you finish is that, yeah, you do have what it takes. And it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. What matters is what you think. So go make yourselves proud on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Michelle. Chloe, you've won here three times. I'm wondering, how are the athletes feeling? You know, we're kind of within 2 days of the race. We're like 38 hours out. What were some of the things you felt at that time?
I think you're a little nervous. You're apprehensive. I think whether you're trying to win here outright or just finish, you have your own expectations. There's a pressure, an external pressure and an internal pressure. I think you're trying to balance all of those things. I mean, I remember the third year that I won here, having a conversation with a guy who'd been a huge influence on my career, and I think I was agonizing over some of the little details. And he knew me quite well, and it was interesting to hear you talk about the different personalities. And I think someone who knows you well knows what you need to hear. And I was probably talking about some sort of nutrition, or do I do something with my bike, and what's going to happen in the race. And he said, well, what's going to happen is you're going to head down to the pier tomorrow morning, you're going to set everything up, and you're going to get on the start line like someone who's won here twice before. That's what's going to happen. So I think we all worry about things before the race, and our mind can be tangled and convoluted. There's a lot of external noise. What was always amazing to me was after the race, 95% of the things that you were thinking about, and sometimes you don't even remember them, didn't even come to fruition. So I think with the experience, you learned to calm those things. But, you know, I was nervous. I raced here 8 times, and I was nervous every single time, because I think there's always a different situation, and you're different as a person to who you were 12 months before or 2 years before. And I know when I was a dad and my kids would come here, I'd feel pressure to do a good performance. And my wife, who had sacrificed so much so we could travel, I felt pressure, but I was able to turn that into motivation later on as well. So I'm sure everyone here...
You hear that? I think that's really on point. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. No, I'm sure everyone here's nervous. And I mean, you've done the work and you're here. And the mindset, I think, is the unlocked potential. There's no secrets to endurance training, as you know, Sarah. You've raced at a high level. You've trained with a lot of probably your competitors who are all doing the same training. I think what differentiates people is those who have an ability to enact certain strategies and get the most out of themselves.
Yeah, you know, one of the stories I used to tell myself early on in my career is that, like, the person who was winning or the women on the podium somehow were having a perfect day, whereas I was the one with all the problems, you know? So sometimes it's good to remind yourself that, like, people are winning, whether it's age group or pro, that people are winning despite having challenges. And I'd love to throw this back to you, Craig. Like, what were some of the challenges that you kind of overcame, even, like, on years when you were having a good race?
One of the interesting things was I sat here early in my Ironman career, and I think it was Paula and Mark were up on stage, and both talked about every single time that they raced here, there were moments in the race that they felt like quitting. And the person who was emceeing the talk said, you mean the years that you had a bad day? And they said, no, even the years that I won. So for me, what I took away from that is if two of the best in history are having problems when they win, the rest of us, we're going to have some problems out there on the day. And in really, I think that's the challenge of it, is what attracts a lot of us to it. We want the challenge, but then we sort of don't want it at the same time. But yeah, part of, for me, I mean, there were so many, you know, Sarah, there's so many things that you predict and so many things that are unpredictable. Danny with the jellyfish is one of the best performances I've ever seen here. But I think it shows the power of the mind. Sometimes physically you might be in a place that you feel is your best, but if you're in a mentally very good place, you always do your best and get the best out of yourself. So,
yeah, that's absolutely true. Thank you. Lauren, I have to make sure the mic's in the right place.
That was really well said.
Yeah, that inspired me. I really appreciate that story.
Like, that was great.
I wanted to ask you about self-sabotage. I was sitting at lunch.
I get the self-sabotage question.
Yeah, you do. You're the clinical counselor.
Yes. Really.
Okay. Leveraging that. I was sitting at lunch with an Olympic champion, and we were talking about some athletes, and he said, you know what, it's crazy how many pro athletes are actually self-sabotagers, and you can see them setting it up ahead of the race, like things that are wrong, niggles they have, talking about what might go wrong. So how do we kind of avoid that type of thing?
So I think the phrase self-sabotager is used better in the third person when talking about someone else, maybe not ourselves, because it's easier to see other people do it than to recognize when we maybe don't show up for ourselves the way that we ought to. And so in terms of maybe training partners that you've had, maybe you've seen a race. I saw a race where some guy like got a flat tire just out of transition, picked up his bike and threw it into the field. And I was like, bro, you're you could run your bike back to bike tech, like, and you don't have a, you're fine. You were like the first guy out of the water, like, settle down, bro. And so in terms of self-sabotage, I think a better way to maybe think about it or talk about it with somebody, if you see it in somebody else, or if you think you might be one of those people, is to be like, hey, Sarah, I think I might do this thing where I kind of make bad decisions in the moment and let emotions rule, or I might not stick to my plan because I think I know better than, say, my coach, who might have 20 years of experience. That sounds crazy, but I've coached for, I don't know, 15 years, and there are still athletes that I've coached for many years who they'll be like, oh, I had a bad race, then we go through the thing, and I'm like, what? Yeah. This was not part of the plan. So sticking with your plan, and really trying to be invested in the race the way you've been invested in your training. So if you've been consistent, you've made it through tough days, you've made it through good days, and you realize, like, this race that we're going to do is literally your entire season compressed into one day. That's what, just think about it that way. Like, you're going to have good moments, bad moments, terrible moments. You might cry for a hot second. That's fine. Get on with it. But being able to really roll with the punches and not let the bad stuff that might happen out here define you or define your race. Because, as you know, we've learned that something's going to go wrong for everybody. So,
yeah. I used to tell some of the athletes that I coach in a similar sense, like, that today is, like, to tell themselves while they're out there, like, today is Ironman day, right? Like, you don't get to choose another day. Something goes wrong, you don't get, like, a restart.
It's
you need to stay in it.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's, I mean, in the context of everything that's going on, too, in the world, like, to be here, have this opportunity, like, step up to the challenge and don't be a sourpuss on race day. Like, I don't mean to be a brat here, but, like, I just don't have a pity party. Like, if you get a flat tire, it's a flat tire. We are on a volcanic island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, nowhere near anything else, and we get to go exercise for, like, 15 to, you know, anywhere from 9 to 17 hours. Like, okay, it's really not that bad. So keep some perspective and stay a little lighthearted, even when you want to, you know, I don't know, punch yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so one of the pieces of advice I share often with executives, and this is usually in regards to finding somebody else difficult, but maybe it applies to finding yourself difficult, and that is to assume best intent, right? So you're having a shit day with somebody. Sorry, can I swear? I just did.
Okay. Absolutely.
You're having a crappy day with somebody, and it's really easy to assume that they're a bad person or that they are purposely trying to hurt you or whatever. But it strikes me that the same applies to yourself as well, right? Like, can you cut yourself a little bit of slack, right? And to your point, to be fully present in this moment. There isn't like a, oh, well, I'll just do it tomorrow. Like, this is it. You are physically ready. You got here. Not that many people get to be here. Now it just comes down to, are you ready in your body's ready? Is your head ready? Right? So when you start to lose it a little bit, when you start to have that slight pity party, when you assume like everything's going to go wrong, that's your opportunity just to pause for a second. I know it sounds trite, but taking 3 deep breaths and really feeling your feet on the ground, realizing you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, as you said so eloquently, and it's this beautiful place, and you have this amazing opportunity, and you hit the restart button and you go again.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, like, most of the athletes here are not pro triathletes, and most of them have a job. A lot of people have really challenging jobs. What are some of the things that they can channel, like, from the boardroom or from other workplace challenges to race day?
Yeah, I think there's so much that translates, right? I mean, it probably was a team that got you here in some way. Somebody's either taking care of the kids or the dog or the whatever at home. You probably have a massage therapist or an acupuncture or 47 other things. So whatever that team is that got you here and helped you to be here right now, ultimately now it's up to you. And it's the same thing at work, right? You're working with amazing people, challenging job, as you said, or whatever, and awesome that you get the opportunity to work with all these amazing people. But ultimately, it's up to you. Whatever it is that you're being expected to do at work, it's up to you to deliver that. And it's the same thing here. You've got lots of support. Fantastic. But at the end of the day, you got to take the ball and run with it.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you. Okay, Michelle, we'll start with you on this one, but I'd love if everyone would chime in. Let's talk about race day nerves. How do we handle that? How do we handle it first thing in the morning?
Hey.
Right. So Anne mentioned earlier the specific ways that our bodies will communicate to us the amount of stress that we're holding on to. So it's really easy in your head to be like, I'm not stressed.
And your shoulders are
up. Right. And then and your jaw is tight and your shoulders are up in your ears and your breath starts getting like way up tight in your chest. When you're in that state where you're breathing high and tight, it's a sign that your body is experiencing some emotional stress. And it will show you that because you'll have those physical symptoms. You might be talking really fast. The palms of your hands might start sweating. Those are the signs. And when you recognize those in yourself, the best thing you can do to send a message directly to your brain that I am safe right now is to breathe low and slow. You want to breathe into your rib cage, breathe low. That sends a direct message right up to your brain that says, everything's fine. Because if you were actually being chased by a lion or a tiger, you would not be breathing low and slow. You would be breathing high and tight and running. And so I'm safe. Everything is fine. A little trick for you is if you start humming, you will increase your own body's production of nitric oxide, which will expand your blood vessels, get blood flowing. You will start thinking more clearly. When you are thinking clearly, you can make better decisions. You can hear what's going on around you. You won't forget your goggles in your bag. Whatever, you'll be able to make all the right decisions because you know what to do when you're breathing high and tight because you're so nervous like this and oh my God, then you can't think and I can't make a good decision. That's when you're in trouble. So recognize in yourself and breathe low and slow and hum.
Yeah, great point. I took an executive leadership course earlier in the year, and one of the things that really stuck with me from that was that, like, this idea that some of our fear responses as humans are not designed for the modern world, right? And so something I tell myself is like, oh, I'm feeling fear right now because like I was supposed to keep my like cubs away from the lion's den, you know? And like that's literally not what's happening out on the Queen K. Like, so some of our fear responses are totally overblown. Crowley, race day nerves, how do we deal with that?
Well, one of the things you talked about, lack of sleep, I think something that helped me was just getting informed. You know, they say knowledge is power. I think the sleep one is something that every athlete at all level worries about, you know, laying awake the night before. And so how do you be proactive? I used to try and get a lot of sleep in the bank earlier in the week. I also read a few studies, particularly from the US military. They do a lot on sleep deprivation, and it gave me confidence to learn that you can not sleep properly for 3 days and still be at your physiological peak. So
3 days?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so you might feel terrible mentally, but you just wake up, do a good warm-up. You can still hit your maximum physiological potential. You might feel terrible and crash afterwards, but once you've done the race, I guess, who cares? I was always nervous, but, you know, my wife, we've been married 25 years next year. We met the year I started in triathlon. She knew the sport well, but she knew me very, very well. And something she suggested very early in my career was just to go back and read through my training diary the week before the race. And it was always good reading. She knew I would train hard and I was very disciplined and I would get a lot of confidence knowing that up to that point I'd really done everything that I could do, and that did make me feel better. I mean, when you understand there's going to be things that pop up on race day and you just do your best to troubleshoot, I think a day before the race, 2 days before, 3 days before, what was very calming for me was thinking that I prepared the best that I can. There was a lot of I know solace in that, and then, and you know, race day will be what it will be.
Yeah, thank you. Anyone else on race day nerves?
I'll jump in. I want to.
No, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I just want to throw this out, the idea out there, and that is, so I'm a depth psychotherapist, which is different than like cognitive behavioral. We kind of take a different perspective on working with clients, and so I try to think a little more creatively when talking to clients, and I imagine anxiety or nerves and excitement as sister emotions, experiences. And the difference that I've come to kind of like discover through my own, you know, racing, working with clients is that nerves and like anxiousness, there's a fear or there's an unknown thing that is floating around in the person's psyche, world, whatever. Whereas excitement is there's this curiosity and openness to like, I don't know what's going to happen and I don't really care in a, you know, kind of, I guess that's the colloquial way to say it. But so I think if you are feeling nervous, totally normal. And can you identify if there's a fear associated with the race? If it's just the unknown, okay, great. You can also be excited about that. And I think that just even that tiniest bit of shift in perspective can really kind of take the level of anxiety down just enough that you don't forget your water bottles and anything else you need, goggles. Yeah.
Thank you. I really loved what you said about going back and reading your racing, your training journal, because I think one of the things that can be so helpful to senior executives, and I'm going to apply it here as well, I'm not a triathlete, I'm just going to admit that, but is to think about your purpose. Why are you doing this? What brought you here? What gets you up at 0:30 to go take that run, get on your bike, go out and swim, whatever it is, whatever your training is for that day, why? And if there is some reason that you can't think of a purpose for yourself, because P.S., women are particularly bad at negotiating for themselves. Again, I'm relating this to business now. But because women are kind of bad at negotiating for themselves when it comes to salary, one of the things that we suggest is that women think about who they're negotiating for. So not that they're negotiating for themselves necessarily, but for my kid or my spouse or my partner or my mom or my whatever. So same thing, like what is your purpose coming back to your center? Why am I here? And if for some reason you can't find that thing, even when you go back and look through your training journals, who are you doing this for? Thinking about those things.
Thank you. That was kind of meaningful to me too. Like I definitely had to find my why when I started building a business, because like we want to make money, but I need to know why and what we're spending that money on and how we're, you know, because yeah, that's, thank you. Okay, let's talk about race day a little bit. It's a long day out there. How would you all suggest, who can we pass it to? Michelle, you're in the hot seat. You know, how do we get ourselves refocused if you find that your mind is wandering and you're thinking about your to-do list or you're worried about the run when you're on the bike? How do you get yourself back to center?
A favorite saying of mine that I've shared with athletes over the years is focus on what you're doing, not how you're feeling. Right. So there'll be times where it's exceptionally challenging out there and you're starting to feel like, oh, I'm hot, I'm tired, my legs hurt, pick a thing. When we focus on those things, sometimes they can start spiraling out of control and start taking on, I don't know how you say it, like a bigger space in our head than they need to. And so you can bring yourself back to like going, what am I doing? Am I fueling myself right now? Am I pulling properly if I'm swimming in the water? Am I in the right gear? Am I pedaling at the cadence that I want to be pedaling at? When you bring yourself back into what am I doing right now, then it can alleviate a lot of that, you know, mind off into other topics. I've had athletes tell me like, oh, I did this swim and I was thinking about all sorts. I was thinking about my daughter. I was thinking about da-da-da. And I was like, oh my gosh. But I'm thinking about staying on those feet that are right ahead of me. Like that's what I'm focused on, is staying on the feet. How fast does my turnover need to be to stay on those feet? And I'm super focused on that in the moment. And you can, that's a trainable skill for sure. So if you feel like you could use some opportunity to train that more, if you're thinking, I don't know that I'm really that good at that focus, great. You have an opportunity on Saturday. You get to practice that.
Well, and no one's staying focused the entire time, right? It's just, it's all about like how quickly you can pull yourself back in.
You can. I mean, focus is a tradable skill. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something that you, and here's the thing, you might not even remember the whole race. I feel like some really good performances, you like, I got off the bike, I'm like, I hardly even remember riding that.
Wow.
Right? Because I was just in the moment and not really thinking about every little thing. Yeah, it's trainable.
Wow. Okay, Crowe, did you stay focused the whole time?
You know, with more practice, I think I did. Even though it's a long race, it seemed to pass quickly. But I want to echo what a lot of the ladies up here have said, is you just bring yourself, I had a mantra, what can I do right now? I wasn't thinking about the bike when I was treading water on the start line. I was thinking, well, what's going to happen? The gun's going to go off. I've got to get out quick, then settle into my pace. So it was always, what are the things that I need to do right now in a race like this? It's normally around pacing and nutrition. They're the two obvious ones. But I had a few little technical cues as well. Long and lovely in the swim. Cadence on the bike. Very quiet upper body. And usually around turnover and just being relaxed on the run. So, yeah, I felt those sort of mental cues for technique were very helpful. But just, yeah, like a systems check, constant. What do I need to do right now to improve my situation? And not even thinking much further ahead than that.
And honestly, I remember watching you race, and especially on the run, like you were someone who like clearly in the zone, like the whole run, and focused on your technique as well. It was very clear watching you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a sport about efficiency, and they're the things you work on in training, but I mean, it's changing behaviors, mindsets, it's repetition, consistency. I mean, you watch a pro golfer, they hit how many thousand golf balls a day, they get up on the first tee, it's more practice swings, it's reinforcing good habits. So that's, yeah, a lot of what I was thinking about during the race was all those technical things and, yeah, just a systems check.
Amazing, thank you. Any other advice from this end? Race day, getting recentered?
I think you guys nailed a lot of the big stuff. The only other thing I would say maybe is, I'll kind of riff on this, and that's if you're feeling overwhelmed with what's left, if you have that thought of like, oh, I just got off the bike and wow, that swim went really fast. Like, it's kind of like that saying when you have kids, the days go slow, but the years go fast. Like, the legs go fast. Like, the swim seems like it goes by fast, then the bike, then the run. But, like, the moments in each sport, holy buckets, does it feel like, oh, that was 30 seconds? Great. So thinking about chunking down the race, and in the next 40 hours or however long we have before the gun goes off, look at the race map if you haven't. If you know the course, imagining, like, okay, I'm chunking down even getting to the start of the race, and then from the start line to the first buoy to the turn to the boat, and then the second turn, then what is it like getting out of town? You've got the Kuakini section on the bike before you even get up to the Queen K properly and head out. So always having like little chunks that you can think about, what's the next like checkpoint I'm getting to? It's not just finishing the swim or the bike or the run, and I think sometimes that can really pull you out of a dark place too.
Yeah, I love that. I used to use that one too. Like, what can I do right now?
Yeah.
You know, and that's all you have control over, right?
It's really all you have control over. That your simple attitude, yeah.
Anne, anything to add?
I think they covered.
Okay, that's covered. We talked, somebody mentioned mantras. Michelle, we were talking before, earlier, you have a special system for helping folks find a mantra out there for race day.
Right, so here's the thing. In years past, I've always thought that affirmations and mantras were a bunch of BS. You know, like you read this thing on the internet and you're just supposed to tell yourself, I love swimming in the ocean, I love swimming in the ocean, I love swimming in the ocean. Well, guess what? Like, if you're not used to swimming in the ocean, you might not love swimming in the ocean the first time you get in it, right? So like trying to just repeat a phrase over and over and over until you believe it is a form of gaslighting yourself. Right? And it doesn't work. But there is a way to create a mantra for yourself that's very real and meaningful. And here's how you do it. You think to yourself about something that you have done that you're really proud of. And Joy, can I use you as an example right now? I'm just going to use it. Joy is a friend of mine, and I literally just did this with her like an hour ago over at one of the tents here in the expo. And so I said to Joy, what's something you've done that you're really proud of? And she mentioned a time that she was here at this race before where she'd been in a bike crash previously, and she was competing with broken bones. And that was a big decision. Do I start this race? I have broken bones. I don't know if I can finish. And she decided, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and try. So she tried. And she finished the race that year. It took her a long time. She finished. She made the cutoff. And I asked Joy, and this is what you ask yourself. When you go back and you think to yourself, what's something I've done that I'm really proud of? The question you ask is, what does that mean about you that you did that thing? So when I asked Joy, what does it mean about you that you finished this race when you were physically broken? And without hesitation, Joy said, it means I'm a badass. And I said, there you go. There's your mantra. In the way that we're creating that mantra, it's personal and it's based on your own evidence that you have for yourself. And so if we go back to the hypothetical, like, I don't love swimming in the ocean, so I'm not going to tell myself over and over and try to lie to myself that I love swimming in the ocean. But I'm going to think to myself, what is it that I want out of this day? Like, I want to finish this Ironman. Great. So swimming in that ocean is a part of finishing this Ironman. So maybe your mantra is, I'm going to be an Ironman. I'm going to finish this Ironman. And that's what you're telling yourself the whole time you're swimming. You don't have to love it out there in order to do it well. You just go, I'm going to finish this Ironman. And that's the mantra that's personal to you. So there is a way to do it, and it's literally a matter of acknowledging the success that you have already had in your life and then asking yourself, what does that mean about me? And acknowledging that, yeah, you are a badass.
Can I build on that?
Yeah.
Because I'm super curious what you think about this, because one of the things that I do in business is I actually take slightly the opposite. I ask people to think about, what's that piece of feedback that you get over and over again that's, you know, constructive feedback, which is just a pretty word for negative, and how can you turn that on its head? So for instance, I constantly was getting told that I was too direct and too honest and a little harsh and blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, there's some things that need to be corrected about that so I don't run over people at work. But there's also some strength in that, right? And so what is the thing that you think you're not good at? I don't love swimming in the ocean. And how can that be turned on its head and actually turned into a strength? Because it's often those things that people tell you over and over again that you suck at, that's actually a superpower. It's just hidden really well.
I'd have to think, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, can you unpack that just a little bit more? I'm just trying to, like, in what way, you know, for you then, that you're very direct?
Yeah.
You know, how did that become your superpower?
Yeah, so it's not a good thing when I'm going to swear again. Sorry, I swear a lot. If somebody perceives me as being a total bitch, right, that's not a good thing. And especially in a senior management role, which is not a good way to operate. But I'm also really good at telling it how it is. And so I had to redirect being really super honest and direct and maybe take a slight edge off of the bitchiness to turn that into a superpower so I could tell people and I could see them and I could give them the gift of, here's where you are awesome and here's where you really need to work so you could be a little bit more awesome. So my directness, which was at times given back to me as a negative, I could turn into a positive. Now, you can do the opposite as well. So if somebody gets the feedback, like, you're always too quiet or you're too shy or you hold back, right? So somebody's basically telling you, speak up more. So the opposite, like, you could take that and, okay, I'm just going to try to speak up more. No, I'm never going to love swimming in the ocean, right? But how can you turn that into a superpower? How can you turn that into a strength instead of the thing that somebody is telling you that you are not good at?
Yeah, got it now. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Crowley, did you have mantras when you were out there?
I had one that helped with training, and it wasn't based on sort of personal data or anything, but I mean, I think it's a fallacy that as a pro athlete, you're always motivated. You have your why and the reasons you're doing it. It's usually tied up, hopefully intrinsically. But often, I mean, nothing erodes motivation like fatigue, and you're training for a race like this, you're always tired. So So I think when you need discipline, when motivation wanes, discipline picks up the slack. But something that helped me was just, I used to say, just get started. Just get started for a hard training session or hopping off the bike here. It's midday, it's hot, you've got a marathon. Don't think about your pace. Don't just get started. I'll worry about those things. I'll just get my legs under me. So, and it worked a lot for me in training. We used to do this session on a Wednesday night, 16 400s in the pool. It was, but we had ridden. It's a big session. We'd ridden Wednesday, long ride day, run off the bike. And one day our coach, who was an Olympic gold medalist, he said, you know, no one's jumping out of their skin to get in the water and swim these 16 400s. And I said, well, why would you be? You know, driving here, that's all I'm thinking about, the 16 400s. He said, well, that's your mistake. Drive here thinking about doing one 400. And, you know, he said to me, I challenge you to do one, and if you ever feel like getting out, you can get out. And once you get one in the bank, I think you just get rolling. So getting started was a good mantra for me.
Yeah, or just, like, do the warm-up. Yeah. Is one that I used to use. And you could use that on, you know, when you come up the bike, or, like, the first mile of the marathon is the warm-up. Like, just do the warm-up, you know, see how it goes. Yeah. Lauren, what are you going to tell yourself out there on Saturday?
What am I going to tell myself? Well, I know I will probably sing some Backstreet Boys at some point on the run. It's good for my cadence. Typically, I try and, like Crowley said, focusing, you can train it to where, like, you know, you're focused because you know you got to eat, you know you need to pace, you know you have to look out for safety. You kind of can't let your focus wane too much. And so for me, I don't really have mantras. I think there are cues that I think about from, you know, my coach in terms of what to think about technique wise. And that always helps, like, as fatigue sets in, just thinking about, you know, if my technique and form is good, I am going to go faster than if I don't pay attention to it, it's going to go to, you know, shit. And that would be, yeah. See, I knew she was going to do it. But things that I'll tell myself are, you know, I have 5 athletes out here racing with me, which is a huge deal as a coach. And I will be out there thinking of them, I'm sure, at some moments, trying to be my best and, like, live into the things I'm telling you guys. And, you know, I started this sport. It saved my life. I mean, I suffered from depression and eating disorder, like, really rough stuff when I was in my 20s. And I'll get emotional thinking about it, but as hard as it gets at any point in the day, I just think about the girl who set the goal to, like, get here and how long it took. It took me a really long time. And so I think I will just remind myself of, you know, 21-year-old Lolo, who would be like, okay, that's pretty cool that you did it. Like, so go faster now. Like, you stop thinking about me. Go. So
that's awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. We had one of our pro interviews earlier in the week said just the exact same thing, like that she thinks of 24-year-old her and thinks, oh my gosh, like, would have been so proud of herself for actually being at an Ironman World Championship.
I don't think the 21-year-old me would believe it either and just be like, that's pretty cool. Like, your life turns out all right.
Yeah. Well, we are running out of time, but I just want to say thank you to my amazing panelists. Thank you all so much. It's been wonderful. I hope everyone learned something, and I wish you all the best race out there on Saturday.